Welcome to the American Federation of Government Employees Inside Government Program, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and MetLife. Now here's your host, Jason Fornicola.
This week we'll discuss President Obama's deficit reduction plan with AFGE Legislative and Political Director Beth Moten and Grantham University's student support programs with Associate Provost Dr. Cheryl Hayek. We'll also hear from AFGE local officers Ivan Weick, Rabina Reed, and Kevin Ellis, who will update us on the latest news from their locals. But with us now, we have Beth Moten, AFGE Legislative and Political Director. Welcome back.
Thanks, Jason. It's good to be back.
Now, Beth, this week the president laid out a deficit reduction plan to pay for his new jobs bill. What's the impact here on federal employees?
Well, the president's proposal would increase the contributions that federal employees have to make to their pensions by a total of 1.2% over the next 4 to 5 years. Essentially, what they would do is they would require an increase of 0.4% in the first year after the pay freeze ends, which I believe is 2013, and then an additional 0.4% the year after that, and an additional 0.4% after that, which is a total of 1.2%. The bottom line is by the year 2016 or so, federal employees who are in the civil service retirement system would go from paying 7% of their salary into their pensions to 8.2%, and FERS employees would go from paying 0.8% of their salaries to pensions up to 2%. So that's what the president's proposal is. He's also got a proposal in there that we had not seen before, which would eliminate a benefit for people who retire from the federal government before they're eligible for Social Security. And it's a Social Security supplement that's available for FERS employees, particularly law enforcement officers. So that's a real concern for us. It doesn't actually save a great deal of money in terms of the overall budget deficit, and we had never seen it before. They seem to perceive this as some sort of an outlier compared to private sector plans. I'm not sure that that's the case. In fact, I know of several industrial unions which have negotiated for a similar Social Security supplement. So we need to go back and try to work through that. They may have just been searching for an additional pot of money and come up in the wrong place for it. But, you know, the main thing I think for people to be concerned about is just this increase in the contributions of 1.2%. That's what's in the president's plan right now that would most significantly affect federal employees.
Do you know what the dollar amount attached to this plan is in terms of the amount that it would cost the federal employees additional to contribute these extra amounts?
Well, it really, of course, it just depends on your salary. I think the numbers that we had run before were indicating that it was somewhere along the lines of an additional $500 to $1,000 for an employee who was, say, a GS-11, something like that. Now, that is over the course of the entire phase-in of the contribution increase.
Still sounds like a lot of money for a federal employee who may be at a GS-5 or 7 or 9 level, right?
Yes, I think it certainly is, and it's a real concern. I don't know. Frankly, what I'm most concerned about is that if people are required to pay more into their defined benefit pension, that they will feel an obligation to pull back from their contributions to the thrift savings plan. And FERS is a three-legged stool, and it's really important to have those three legs. Without it, it's hard for a federal retiree to have a secure retirement. Social Security, of course, is the main leg of that stool, but then the defined benefit pension part of FERS is also crucial. And it's not generous, but it's decent, and that's one of the reasons we're disappointed in this increase. But the crucial part for federal employees who participate in the thrift savings plan is that if they put in 5% of their salary into their TSP account and everything goes pretty well, they should see a pretty serious growth in the earnings from those investments over the course of their active working lives in the federal government. And we don't want people to reduce their contributions to the TSP because it's a very efficient, affordable 401k equivalent savings plan, and it's very different from some of the 401ks which are available in the private sector, which, as far as I can tell, are mostly designed to enrich hedge fund managers and not actually take care of the employees who are participating. the first thrift savings plan is actually a very, very good one. And I will want to make sure people are contributing at least 5% in order to get everything that they have coming to them out of this.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with AFGE Legislative and Political Director Beth Moten. Beth, what's the reaction of federal employees on this increase in retirement contributions?
Well, I think they're disappointed, but I think the most important thing is they realize that we still have a long way to go here, and this proposal is simply that. It is the president's proposal. It's an aggressive proposal on the front of taxing millionaires and billionaires, which we're very happy to see. It does seem like the administration has acknowledged that it's time for people who've done so well in these economies, whether they're good economies or bad economies, it's time for those people to pony up and do their share to try to take care of the federal services that we all require. But it's going to the super committee, as you said, and we're in full court press lobbying members of the super committee to make sure that they know that we don't want any additional cuts to federal employees' compensation, that the $60 billion over 10 years that federal employees have already contributed as a result of the two-year pay freeze is enough. And in addition to that, federal employees are also having to feel the squeeze at the office because these hiring freezes that are going to be implemented, if they haven't already been in their agencies, that means that people are going to be doing more work with fewer staff people, and it's just going to be a lot harder to get the job done. And especially for people, federal employees who deal directly with the public, they're not going to be happy about the fact that there's not enough enough staff to go around and take care of the beneficiaries and the claimants and patients. So we're worried about things like that. I think federal employees have more than contributed what they could possibly have done, and we're going to try to be telling the super committee to lay off, and that is enough.
Beth, as you mentioned, the president's plan is an initial proposal. How likely do you think that becomes law, and what do you think a final package might look like?
Well, I don't know, Jason. I'm not really a good reader of the tea leaves. I will just say that I think the super committee is going to have a really hard time. I think things are extremely polarized. As you know, the Republican leadership says that they're dead set against any tax increases, and they're defending the current tax rates for millionaires and billionaires, which to me is just shocking and unconscionable, but that's what they're doing. And as long as they maintain that position, at the same time that they're insisting that there should be cuts to entitlements like Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, it'll be very hard, I think, for the super committee to come up with a deal. And if they don't come up with a deal, then that leads to sequestration, which is a very scary proposition, and I don't think anybody wants that. But it's a tough time on Capitol Hill. I don't think that we're anywhere close to what could be construed as an agreement.
As you mentioned, federal employees have been asked to come up with about $60 billion over 10 years to help with this deficit reduction. Can you remember a time in the past when federal employees have been asked to do so much to help out with the problem?
Well, I've been doing this since 1985, and there were some bad years in the late 80s and early 90s when there was a big deficit reduction. Graham Redmond Hollings was the name of the were the names of the three senators who authored the sequestration process if they didn't get to a budget balance. And that was a tough time for us. We faced some cuts to retirement then and fought back against some other things that were just unbelievable. But I will say this is the first time in a very long time that we've been in a situation like this. Federal employees always seem to be sort of threatened in some way or another, whether it's their collective bargaining rights or their jobs or contracting out or a number of things. But this is the first time in quite a long while that they've had to give up that level of compensation in order to achieve a deficit reduction target.
Beth Moten, AFGE Legislative and Political Director. Beth, thank you so much for your time. We're certainly going to keep an eye on this.
All right. Thank you, Jason. I appreciate it.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, Grantham University's Dr. Cheryl Hayek will discuss the school's student support programs and AFGE member benefits.
Looking for a hassle-free way to buy a new computer, electronics, or home appliances? Purchasing Power allows you to buy items such as Dell laptops, HP desktops, and Kenmore appliances through easy payroll deduction. There's no upfront cash required, no credit checks, and AFGE members get a 6% discount with promo code AFGEMember. That's all one word. Get started today. Log on to shoppurchasingpower.com. That's shoppurchasingpower.com.
Did you know MetLife Auto and Home has valuable deals on insurance for AFGE members that could save them hundreds every year? Benefits include special discounts just for being an AFGE member, and in most states, a deductible credit for claim-free driving up to $250. Call the AFGE Benefits line at 1-888-844-2343 today to see how much you could save. That's 1-888-844-2343. Underwritten by Metropolitan Group Property and Casualty Insurance Company, Warwick, Rhode Island.
Attention AFGE members. AFGE has formed an exclusive partnership with Grantham University to offer you and your family members a special discounted tuition rate. With Grantham University's 100% online degree programs, it's even easier to earn a college degree while working full-time and meeting the needs of your family. Military and government training may be eligible for transfer credit. Find out more at grantham.edu/AFGE. That's grantham.edu/AFGE.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Dr. Cheryl Hayek, Associate Provost of Grantham University. Dr. Hayek is also the Vice President of Faculty and Student Experience. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Now, Grantham University places a high emphasis on student success with a number of support programs in place. What are some of those programs?
You know, we're really proud of this, I have to tell you, and to show you how proud and how much we do stand out in this area. We just were the recipients of the APSCU 2011 Best Program Innovative Practice Award for our student support and our faculty support program, which we call VIP Squared. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that, but what we believe is that we have to be student-centric, and sometimes it's not even enough to just be student-centric. We have to be military-centric. We have to be first-generation college student-centric. Students are different, and we need to not have an education one-size-fits-all type program, and so that's what we do. We curtail our program to our students, so I'll give you a little bit of an example. We have a student advising program. That's a layer that not every online university has. And that is a personal advisor that helps the student through the program, whether it's just encouragement, helping them with academic choices on which courses to take. They'll even get you on the phone with the dean if you have a question on a program that someone can't answer. They'll put the dean on the phone or the chair on the phone, a faculty member. So it's that real personalized support that we believe heavily in. We start them off on the right foot. We have a GU100 student success orientation course. And this course, to me, is phenomenal. It's not just about welcome to Grantham. It's about your learning styles. It's about identifying ways that you can memorize and some good test-taking strategies. Because let's face it, as adults, we've been out of formal education for a while. We've learned all our lives. We've continued learning on the job and through our personal experiences. But formal education is a little bit different. So we teach them about that, how to go back and learn that. And then we teach them about goal setting. Let's create a degree plan. Let's get that mission that we're all headed towards, and we're going to work you towards that. We will help you graduate is our motto. We will insist upon it, and we're here to help you, support you. So this GU100 course, to me, is phenomenal because from an educator standpoint, we're teaching people how to learn again, and I think that's something we all need. And then we have a tutoring center, which is our Student Advising and Learning Center, and we'll provide you with a faculty tutor at no additional charge to help you through whatever troubles you might have. So if you're finding time management is your issue, we're going to have that faculty tutor help you through that. If you're finding the content is the issue, we're going to have that person work you through that as well. So we just, from every angle possible, we are trying to get our students the support they need to take on this task of coming back to college and let them know they're not alone.
Now, Cheryl, how important is it to have these support programs in place to do things like goal setting, to figure out a student's learning style?
I'm so glad you asked that because when I got my doctorate, my entire dissertation was on learner support for the adult learners and at-risk students in particular, like a veteran or military population, which, as you know, is a large part of Grantham's demographic. And what we find in the research, and I mean theoretical and historical research, but I also mean in the practical application of it all, is that students at risk need support. When you have support, you do well. You know, it's kind of actually like the military. They learn a lot about camaraderie in the military, and that you have that culture of interdependence where you depend on your comrade to get you through. It's just like that in education. Regardless if you're 18 or whether you're 45, you need support to get through, and you need multiple levels of support. We call that scaffolding in education, to scaffold your support levels. So we have faculty support levels, we have dean support levels, we have peer support levels, and the student advisor. So we know, based on research and based on current practice, that having a support system in place from your family straight through to your university is what helps you to succeed.
Can you give some insight into the challenges that today's students face?
Wow. Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, we have, we're multitaskers. We have jobs. We have family. We have stressors. And actually, when we talk about education and adults in particular, it's categorized into three different barriers. They say situational or life barriers. That's one. That's our largest one. Institutional barriers. And then finally, it's dispositional barriers. So this is the crux of it all. As an institutional barrier, those are the things that Grantham breaks down to minimal. We have such adult-friendly, military-friendly policies that we can break down that barrier. We are not the university that says this is so stringent here that we cannot have an adult succeed. We give you weekly term starts. We give you that advisor to say, I need to change my start date. I need to go to a different time. We are so flexible with our adult students that we break down institutional barriers, which many other places do not. So we recognize that. The second piece of that is recognizing situational and life barriers, which is the largest part of why adult learners drop out. Things happen in their lives, and they just cannot feel like they cannot overcome. But the reality is, and actually what my research determined, is that if you have a supportive university that breaks down those institutional barriers, we absolutely can, as higher education stakeholders, mitigate those situational and life barriers and have students succeed. And that's why I think Grantham is so different. We recognize that. Many colleges focus on what we call deficit theory, which is looking at the deficits that an adult learner brings. And they focus on those. We don't do that at Grantham. We focus on what I would call asset theory. It's what are their internal attributes that make them phenomenal college students. And we know what those are. They've lived through life. They know what perseverance is. They know what dedication is. They know how to respect authority. So what we do at Grantham is we hone in on assets that adults have, and we promote those, support those, and guide those through to graduation.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with Dr. Cheryl Hayek, the Associate Provost of Grantham University. Cheryl, to overcome some of these barriers, Grantham has a unique approach to this, a two-pronged approach. And at the beginning, you mentioned the VIP Squared program. Tell us about that and the other methods that you have in place.
I'm really excited about these. This is what I was telling you before. As you said, we won the award for this. So we have a VIP Squared Faculty Training, Development, and Leadership Program. And VIP Squared is an acronym. Now, hopefully everyone immediately gets that connotation of VIP meaning an important person. Well, guess what? We have various important people. We have our faculty who are in contact with our students, and we have our students. So this VIP Squared program is basically, the motto is that VIP faculty deliver a VIP education. And what VIP stands for to us is visible, immediate, personal, and proactive. And every single faculty member action is based on being visible, immediate, personal, and proactive. Now, when we talk about those things, well, why those things? If we look at all best practices across higher education, and we take their lists and list them. We have seven best practices for undergraduates. We have all these best things for online, best things for adult, and we merge all of those practices into one succinct acronym. It literally works into visible, immediate, personal, and proactive. So now I have a faculty member who has an easy mantra in their mind of every choice they have to make, what they need to do to make that choice be an effective one that's student-centered. And that is, they're going to be visible in their classrooms and on discussion forums and in email responses. They're going to be immediate in those responses because an adult is busy. They don't have the time to search around for answers. They need an immediate response. And we are personal and proactive. We believe in treating our adults with the best care we can possibly give them. We will be personal and personable with them, and we will try to prevent any future barriers by being proactive in all the choices that we make. So that VIP Squared program treats our faculty the same way. I treat my faculty like VIPs. I am there answering emails from 5 a.m. till midnight. I have my BlackBerry with me all the time. They never feel like they're alone so that they can then deliver that same immediacy to their students when they have questions. So that's the faculty end of it, because faculty are the most important piece as far as level of contact with students. They're in the highest contact volume with students. So we want to make sure that we take care of faculty, that they're well-trained, that they have the ability to get back to our students right away, and that they have high expectations, that we have high expectations of them, because we expect them to give that and forward that on as a ripple effect to our students. The second part of this is called SSS, which is Swaddling Support Services. And at first, you know, that might sound like, oh, my goodness, swaddling, that sounds like, you know, you're wrapping an adult in an infant way. But it's actually more of a behavioral psychological piece to it, and that is that we know that human behavior shows that when people feel well taken care of, and this is way back to Abraham Maslow, theoretically, if we go back to that, but we know that when people feel well taken care of, they can do miraculous things. Their inner needs are met, and they can move forward and do and move mountains, I guess. And so what we do is we take that knowledge of behavioral psychology and we apply that in how we support our students with a swaddle effect, so with that blanket effect. We wrap them tight enough in support, but not too tight where they can't move. And we do that through those student advising programs, through having prepared faculty through VIP Squared, through having a constitution that we stand and we believe in with all of our hearts. We have shirts at Grantham that we wear with the constitution written on the back. We live it and we breathe it. You know, I always say that Grantham employees bleed blue and gold, because we truly, truly love what we do. I don't think you could work at Grantham if you didn't love what you did and who we serve. So that's part of that swaddling support. We will take care of our students' needs so that we can make them successful, because that's what it's all about. We will get them to graduate.
Cheryl, shifting gears for a minute, Grantham has a unique partnership with AFGE and, in fact, just rolled out a new benefit recently. Tell us about that.
Oh, I'm really excited about this. We have a new members benefit, and we offer our personal finance course to AFG members and spouses at no cost. It's an 8-week course. It's valued at $750, and it actually gives you tools to get out of debt, create a strategy to reach your financial goals, and build a financial future with your family. And you get 3 credit hours when you're done. But what I love most about this course, when we go back to, again, educational theory, is it's all hands-on. This is not a theory course. I am not going to speak to adults in theory about what they can do with their personal finances. You actually bring your personal finances to class, and we work on your personal finances. It is it's your own pitfalls that we get to fix right then and there in 8 weeks. Because you get to do it with your spouse, these real-time assignments give you conversations to work with and improve on and come to common goals on. So, I mean, it is 8 weeks that you come out not only learning about personal finance in general, but you learn about your personal finances. So we're really proud to offer that to AFGE members.
Where can AFGE members learn more about that benefit?
We have you can visit the website at www.afge-grantham.com.
Dr. Cheryl Hayek, Associate Provost and Vice President of Faculty and Student Experience at Grantham University. Thank you so much for your time.
A true pleasure. Thank you so much.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll get local updates from AFGE Fair Practices Coordinators Ivan Weick and Rabina Reed.
Attention AFGE members. AFGE has formed an exclusive partnership with Grantham University to offer you and your family members a special discounted tuition rate. With Grantham University's 100% online degree programs, it's even easier to earn a college degree while working full-time and meeting the needs of your family. Military and government training may be eligible for transfer credit. Find out more at grantham.edu/AFGE. That's grantham.edu/AFGE.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Ivan Weick, Sergeant-at-Arms for SSA Local 3937 and the District 11 Fair Practices Affirmative Action Coordinator. Ivan, welcome to the program.
Thank you, sir.
So today we have you here at AFGE's Human Rights Training Conference in Atlanta, Georgia. Tell us what you've seen so far.
What I've seen so far is the coming together of people who believe in our government and believe that we need to keep it and strengthen it as much as possible, because these are vital services that the American public needs and that they deserve. And we are all here to learn more about human rights, not just for the federal employees, but for the public in general. Human rights encompasses workers' rights, civil rights, as well as basic fundamental human rights.
Ivan, how important is it to have training opportunities like these throughout the year? This is a very unique training concept. How important is it?
It's very important because if people are not reinvigorated, they're not kept up to date, and if they are not, shall we say, getting the frequent shot in the arm of spirit and belief, they tend to become lost, and they wonder, what do I do? What happens now? Why did this change? Why is this happening to me? Why is this happening to the public? We have to be able to understand it. We have to understand the history behind it. We have to understand how to move forward. And the only way you can do that is to have training. In agencies, there's training. It's ongoing there, and it's so that people can keep up with the job. With us, the training is the same. We need to keep up because the laws change daily because of either statutory law, case law, or there is something new that is decided by our administrators. And we have to be able to either work with it or find a way to change it if it's wrong.
What are some of the classes that you've attended that have stood out to you so far?
I am in the Advanced Equal Employment Opportunity training class, in which we are going through the actual commencing of the EEO case before the administrative law judge. There's mock discovery, there's mock pretrial conferences, and there's even a mock hearing in which the instructor plays the EEO judge.
Let's shift to your work responsibilities at the SSA in Silverdale, Washington. Tell us about your day-to-day duties.
I am in the office quite early in the morning. The first thing I do is I pull in internet claims that are filed by the public, and we start working those cases. Those cases with future entitlement months for, like, say, retirement and spouse claims, if they're future retirement month, we work those. They are not considered priority because it's a future month. It's not a priority case. They are worked in a very consistent manner. The second thing I do is I look at my pending caseload for that particular day, and then I take appointments for the remainder of the day. And about 50% of my cases I can clear almost immediately. The rest of them require some development, either answering of questionnaires by the claimant or production of documents.
As a union official with AFGE Local 3937, what are your biggest challenges in representing the membership?
I think the biggest challenges we have is, as you know, we have lost a great deal number of employees. That also equals, in some cases, a great deal number of potential members. As new people come in, we need to be able to engage them. We need to organize them. We need to get them to join with us, because it's not just a union management issue. It affects everybody. Every worker is affected by either the changes by the management, changes by the administrator, or the changes in the law.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with Ivan Weick, SSA Local 3937 Sergeant at Arms. Ivan, you mentioned in your office you have lost a number of employees. Not only does that impact your local, but talk about the impact that it has on public services in Washington.
Well, to begin with, it wasn't just a large number of employees in my office. Yes, we've lost a handful of employees in the last 5 years, but overall, as Commissioner Astrew said, and if we've even seen ourselves, 1,600 employees have retired from SSA. We are unable to provide the level of service that the public needs because we're constantly serving the public from 9 a.m. all the way up to 4 p.m. in the afternoon. With the loss of 1,600 employees and a hiring freeze, the work somehow gets stalled. So now we have an early closing. We now have offices closing at 3:30 in the afternoon this coming Monday. And that means the phones will be turned off at 3:30 if you need to call your local field office. And the office doors are closed at 3:30 in the afternoon.
Ivan, as you know, the motto for this year's Human Rights Training Conference is AFGE under attack. As a federal employee, talk about how it makes you feel to be under attack by legislators, by sometimes the public.
The way I feel I'm under attack is that, you know, this is a job that I've had for 21 years, and they told us when we came in the door, you know, this is an excellent opportunity for you. There'll be retirement, there'll be thrift savings, there will be great health insurance benefits. In the last 5 years, I've seen it decline, and right now we're under the threat that if they have to change our retirement contributions and the way they figure the retirement, it's going backwards. It's going back on what we were told by people who sold the notion to us, come work for the government. We have an excellent retirement system. People join the federal government knowing full well that the wages are not what they are on the outside. The wages are much higher. Case in point, the attorneys who come to work for Social Security are taking a lower wage, whereas an attorney in private industry is billing out at $375 an hour and upwards. So people join the government because of their retirement and that it is somewhat secure and that there are other excellent benefit packages. What is under attack is I'm within 5 years of being able to retire, and now I have to rethink how I'm going to do it. I have to rethink what's going to happen if they come through with this retirement refiguring of our contributions. They want to go from a small percentage up to almost 5 to 8%. And if you did that, I would have to shut down my thrift savings plan and move my financial savings elsewhere where it is a lesser APR. And that's not right. Health insurance benefits have gone down. They are taking away and eroding away some of the benefits, but yet they are jacking up the premiums on us. We are also seeing people who have just retired, their retirement got slashed even more. One employee I represented, she went out on disability retirement. Her retirement got reduced another 40%.
How does all that make you feel?
It makes me feel like there are only two kinds of people left in this world. That there are those who are very affluent, and those of us who are now middle class, which is what I've been accustomed to all my life, and I'm going to be down in the poor section of the population. And that's not right.
As you work to move AFGE Local 3937 through this, how are you going about attacking the problem?
What we are doing is we're visiting every office and we are answering questions of the federal employees because we have the first-hand information. We are getting it a lot faster than the agencies are distributing it to the employees. We're telling them, your job is on the line. Your benefits are on the line. You are actually in danger of losing a benefit or more benefits. Here is what we know. Here is what could happen. And here is how you can help. And we are asking everyone to please get involved. If anything, if you don't become a member, by all means, stay informed and join us when we have organized demonstrations.
Ivan Weick, Sergeant at Arms for SSA Local 3937. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you, sir.
We've been joined by Rubina Reed, the Fair Practices Coordinator for AFGE Department of Transportation Local 3313 out of Washington, D.C. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
So you have a very interesting cause that you are championing here, and that's about mesothelioma and the presence of asbestos in federal buildings. Tell us about that.
I think people need to know that asbestos is a type of mineral, and it's a product that was for sale for a very long time, and it's present in many buildings and products. And the exposure to asbestos can lead to some very serious diseases, including a type of cancer called mesothelioma. I think that more attention needs to be paid to identifying possible exposure hazards and to inform people about what can happen if they are exposed to asbestos. And so that's why I've become interested in this cause.
The presence of asbestos, I think when people think of it frequently, they think of it as something in yesterday's time, from back in maybe shipyards or other places that we didn't know about it quite as much during the time, but it became prevalent and people felt like it was dealt with. But that may not necessarily be the case, especially in some older buildings in
That's
the federal
correct,
government.
Yes. Many older buildings need to be examined, and they need to have a hygienist test the materials in the building to make sure that the building is free of asbestos. Once it becomes airborne, you can breathe it in, and it can cause damage to your lungs, and that can lead to the cancer mesothelioma.
In your experiences, how prevalent is this throughout the federal government where it may be an issue in some of these buildings?
I'm not exactly sure of the extent of asbestos that's still in federal buildings, but I am aware that it can be there, and it should be something that's examined by union stewards or an issue that should be taken up by occupational hygienists, because the exposure can lead to very serious diseases.
For federal employees who may be concerned that their building could have high concentrations of asbestos in it, what should they be looking for as signals?
I think that they should probably take a look at any records for the building. Occupational hygienists may have conducted tests on the building, and if they have any concerns, they should probably contact public health officials or their union stewards and identify the problem to those individuals.
You had noted that exposure to asbestos can lead to mesothelioma. Talk about the research that's needed to fight back against this disease.
Well, unfortunately, mesothelioma is a very aggressive type of cancer. Not a lot of money has been devoted to addressing treatments for this disease. Unfortunately, there is really only one treatment that's been approved, and it doesn't eradicate the disease within the person who's suffering from this type of cancer. So we're hopeful that more attention will be paid to this problem and that more funding will be devoted to the research needs that are required to adequately develop therapies to treat this problem.
How many people each year are diagnosed with mesothelioma?
Approximately 3,000 people every year. That's a lot, really. It seems like it's a small number, but it has the potential for going higher, and that's why it's such a worrisome problem.
What's the funding for the research?
It's really quite low. We're hoping that the National Cancer Institute will devote more dollars to this disease. I think that it's something that should rise in importance to the funding research dollars that the United States government provides, because the exposure is so universally prevalent in society.
Are you surprised that there aren't more cases, or is it possible that the number of cases that we see every year that are new don't tell the full story?
There's a long latency period for mesothelioma, and some estimates are as high as 40 years before you may actually begin showing symptoms of the disease, compared to when you were first exposed to the disease-causing agent, which is the asbestos. And so it's very possible that the number of cases may escalate dramatically in the years to come, because asbestos was a very common product in many consumer products as well as in building materials.
Now, in addition to being used in buildings and homes and schools, it's also prevalent in some other areas, such as, I believe, car brakes and some household items. Is that correct?
That's true.
Could you give us a little information about that?
Asbestos is very resistant to heat type environments, and so its value as a product was that it was so capable of withstanding high temperatures. So yes, you'd see it in any friction type products, such as brake linings and anything that might be involved in flame retardant applications.
So where can people go to get more information about asbestos and of course, mesothelioma as well?
The Mesothelioma Applied Research Foundation, which is located in Alexandria, Virginia, can provide additional information, and they may also be reached on the web at www.curemeso.org. That's curemeso.org.
Rabin, I'm going to give you the last word here.
Well, I really hope that people will consider the dangers of mesothelioma as well as the dangers of being exposed to asbestos in an occupational setting and have any suspicions that they may feel examined by qualified professional people.
Rubina Reed, Fair Practices Coordinator for AFGE Department of Transportation Local 3313. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, AFGE Veterans Affairs Local 2338 President Kevin Ellis will discuss his local's grassroots mobilization efforts.
Attention AFGE members. Did you know about AFGE's new service to assist you with legal rights issues? It's called the AFGE Legal Rights Attorney Program, which offers free attorney representation in cases brought by AFGE councils and locals on behalf of AFGE members. The program, administered by AFGE's General Counsel's Office, has handled more than 150 cases since 2005 and has won millions of dollars in back pay for our members. The Legal Rights Attorney Program is designed to take cases that will be brought to arbitration, the Merit System Protection Board, or other review boards where both back pay and attorney's fees are available. These cases include removal, suspension, reduction in pay, reduction in grade, and furlough. For information about the program, please email legalrights@afge.org. Not a member? Become one and take advantage of this incredible resource today.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Kevin Ellis, the newly elected president of AFGE Veterans Affairs, Local 2338 in Poplar Bluff, Missouri. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jason.
And as a newly elected local president for AFGE, first off, congratulations to you.
Thank you very much. I am looking forward to it.
And speaking of looking forward, what are some of your goals as a new local president here at AFGE?
You know, one of the goals, that one of our short-term goals, is we want to begin to educate local areas in which we live and work every single day. One of the misconceptions about a union and about labor organizations is that we are evil and we're worthless, and that's just simply not the case. So our short-term goal here is to get reorganized, reestablish our union, and begin to integrate with our local areas here to inform our local communities that we are just like they are, working-class families and just middle-class workers.
What are some of the methods that you're going to use to go about reaching out to the public and connecting with the community there in your area?
You know, one thing I thought was very, very important. Here in small areas like I live, people read a lot of newspapers and listen to a lot of talk radio. And one of the things that I thought about that we really needed to do was to contact our local editors at our local newspaper stations, our local radio stations, and our local news channels to inform them that government employees are not overpaid federal fat cats. And, you know, that is one of our short-term goals, because I believe that if you can change the opinion at the grassroots level in your smaller towns, that we can begin to change the tone that's been sent out by Washington.
Kevin, what led you to not only federal service, but on again into the labor movement?
You know, I have always been a Democrat at heart. And one of the things that I can tell you, growing up as a kid, I've always been one of those that wanted to help people. I can recall being a small kid when I was probably 7 or 8 years old, and my grandmother raised me, and she took me out with her one day on work, and she was a green thumber. And what a green thumber did in those days was they went to low-income families and taught them how to plant their own gardens, can their own vegetables, and things of that nature. And from a very young age, it was really a burden upon my heart to always be helpful to people. And when I learned about AFGE and what it was fighting for and the issues that were at hand, I just had to become a part of it. I just could not afford to stand and sit on the sidelines any longer.
Share with the audience your thoughts on how a labor organization like AFGE can be the driving force behind equality in the workplace.
You know, this is the part where I really think that we need to get our message out to the local community. AFGE, for probably about two centuries, have just been the driving force behind working-class families. Some of the things that we have done in years past was we've secured accumulation of vacation days, sick days. We reduced the work day from 12 to 14 hours down to 8 hours a day. We help families get flexible work schedules. I mean, there are just so many things that labor unions have done for working class members and people all across this country, and we don't realize it. Health care is a very, very big issue. You know, people talk about health care and about all of these issues that are facing the community. If it had not been for labor organizations, and this can be easily researched, this country would be no different from a country like China or Russia or Cuba. Labor organizations have been the driving force and have brought equality to the working class families. They brought equality to just every part of our community. Labor organizations have actually improved private sector, because without the labor unions asking and demanding for fair pay and fair treatment and fair representation, the private sector wouldn't be as advanced as they are now. And even though they have advanced some, they could advance so much further if they would just get behind the labor movement and support it.
And speaking of advancing it further, what are a couple of key issues that you're looking at advancing throughout your time as a local president?
A couple of key issues. My main issue, like I said earlier, is that we have to get out and we have to be visible within our communities. We have to continue to support our communities, support our veterans. You know, when Washington talks about cutting government spending, they're talking about cutting jobs. And when they're talking about cutting jobs, they're talking about taking food off the table. They're talking about taking gasoline out of the gas tank. They're talking about homes going into foreclosures, cars being repossessed, kids having to drop out of college. You know, this is a message that we need to take to America, that labor organizations and government employees are just middle-class working people. Some people here within our own communities, and I've talked to them, they thought that government employees received free health care and free pension plans, and that is just simply not the case. I know education has to be the top priority, and if you can educate the public and you can educate the community and you can educate your members, you know, that's something that will go a long way. We're going to have to mobilize. You know, silence can be very deadly, and it can be dangerous. And one of the things that I realized happened over the past couple of months is that we kind of left our vice president hanging. Vice President Biden was here a couple of months ago when they were talking about the deficit and how they were going to balance the budget and cutting government spending. AFGE sent out a national request to all 270,000 members and asked us to sign a petition either by email or by hard copy paper. The unfortunate thing and the unintended message that was sent was we didn't care, because out of 270,000 signatures that were requested, we were only able to harness 16,000. Now, you know, when I told my members that happened, they were just in complete silence. They could not believe and understand that that happened to us. But that was the unintended message if we remain quiet. So we have to get out there and we have to reintroduce ourselves and reintroduce our new workforce to what the old unions did for us.
Now, Kevin, how does it make you feel when people attack the federal workforce and the services that you provide the American public?
No, as you can probably tell, I'm very compassionate about this issue. It doesn't make me feel very good, and I realize that it all comes back to education. We serve here at John J. Pershing. We live in a little small town, and we service about 18,000 veterans and their families. So that number could very easily be about 60,000 people, because when you support the veteran and you give the veteran care, you also support that veteran's family. And it really hurts me. It really hurts me more than it does anger me that people misinterpret and misunderstand what we do. You know, we send veterans off to combat. They serve this country. Some of them come back with injuries. Some of them come back with mental illnesses and so forth. And just the thought that they're attacking the same institution that sent them over and the same individuals that are trying to help them, it really just saddens me. I'm really, really disappointed when I hear that type of language. It just really disappoints me.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with Kevin Ellis, president of AFGE VA Local 2338. Kevin, earlier this week there was a report in the Washington Post that indicated most federal employees are actually located outside of the D.C. metro area. And as we know, many of these federal employees work in small towns like yours where the federal government is the main employer. Talk about the role that the federal government plays in putting workers in your town to work.
You know, boy, I tell you, I could go on and on about this all day long. Being a choice employer in this town I live in has about 17,000 people in it. And if you really, and that's really including the outlying little small towns like Dexter and Keelan and Puxico and East Carter. When, you know, we are a main employer here. And if you take those jobs and if you take those benefits away from them families, it really devastates our community. I mean, and it's a big point of emphasis with me. Don't cut federal jobs. Don't cut benefits. Don't cut pensions because you affect everyday working people. You know, it really bothers me that the issues at hand are really not really being discussed as it affects people in our smaller towns. I remember a few years ago paying about $1 to maybe $1.10 per gallon for gasoline. And over the next 2 or 3 years, that has grown to about $3.50 a gallon to maybe $4 a gallon. And that is $2 that comes out of our community that goes into the pockets of big oil. That's $2 that I don't have to spend on going to the movies, taking my family out to dinner. I can't buy clothing. I can't buy tennis shoes. I mean, we struggle to buy necessities that we have to have here within our small area. So I know when you talk about taking jobs and how it affects the American people, it affects us here every single day.
Sure, and at a time when workers need jobs and the economy is still working its way back to full strength, I imagine a time like this would be a very hard time to cut jobs in small towns.
It is devastating. You know, there has been some discussion here lately that we have been asked to, our facility has been asked to cut maybe anywhere from 80 to 100 jobs over the next couple of years or so. Well, you know, when you have an employer that employs about 500 individuals, 80 to 100 jobs is about 20% of your workforce. And that's a huge, huge, huge number. That number is alarming.
Kevin, talk about the emphasis now that you're going to put on organizing new members and getting them involved in Local 2338.
You know, word of mouth here spreads very quickly and very easy. And we've got to get out here and we've got to begin beating the bushes. You know, we left everything up to our president and our vice president. We elected Obama into office and Joe Biden. And I think for us at the grassroots level, we just took our hands off thinking, well, he's going to fix everything. This new Congress can do whatever they need to do. But that was not the case at all. So what we've began asking our members to do is pick up the telephone, call your elected representatives, call your senators, call your mayors, call and talk to businesses, call and talk to newspapers, and tell them, you know, this is not right, and we need to stop assaulting the middle-class workers, stop assaulting our families, stop assaulting our dreams, stop assaulting everything that labor organizations and the middle-class families have lived and died for.
Kevin Ellis, president of AFGE VA Local 2338. Kevin, thank you for your time, and good luck with your grassroots movement. Thank you to our guest this week, AFGE Legislative and Political Director Beth Moten, Grantham University Associate Provost Dr. Cheryl Hayek, and AFGE Local Officers Ivan Weick, Rabina Reed, and Kevin Ellis. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and that's The View from Inside Government.
Thank you for listening to Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and MetLife.